What's up? Happy Friday. Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Special Friday edition on the air a little early at 11 here live from Nat Bailey Stadium. I'm Jamie Dodd. Drancer's off. Bick Nizar filling in with me once again at the Nat. What's going on, man?
Hello.
You're not going to match my energy at all. You're just like, nah, I'm good.
You weren't looking, but because you were focused on the rundown and on your laptop. When you started with the big, what's up? Everybody in the plaza looked over. And I was like, I'm just going to be chill. I'm going to start the show and be like, hey, what's up?
What's going on? That's just part of doing the show live on location. We are here for the Nooner. It's the Canadians and Spokane at Nat Bailey, 1 o'clock start. Of course, we'll have the call here for you on Sports at 650. Tyler Zickel, as always, on the call. Started a little grim in the morning in terms of weather, but the sun is coming out. We got, you know, the clouds are parting, so it's looking like the game is going to go and looking like it's going to be a fun time at Nat Bailey.
We got official confirmation. Tarps are off. Yep. They're pumped up. First pitch, shortly after 1 o'clock. TZ with the call. We'll have it. And, I was a little worried when we woke up and I was told, hey, clouds are going to break. Don't worry about it. Sunshine's going to be there right at 11 o'clock. And I can promise you right now, I'm wearing
the sun is shining.
I got my sunglasses on. Yeah. Jamie doesn't.
I do not have my sunglasses. I was like, I saw the clouds. I was like, I won't need these. And then I got here. I was like, I do need them.
Big fiasco.
Massive fiasco.
During the startup of the show, Jamie was like, oh, I should have brought sunglasses. And for a moment, we're like, do you need sunglasses?
Dom and Bick both went to like DEFCON 5. They're like, do you want me to go to the car and get some? I'm like, no, guys.
DEFCON 1,
that's fair. We're literally sitting under a tent.
Although,
it's going to be okay.
It's such a lack of emergency, DEFCON 5 probably applies.
Yeah. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the mobile Kintec studio here at Nat Bailey. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll try to chat with Tyler Zickel at some point here on the show. Randy Janda will join us at noon. We're going to do guys name and dudes again to wrap up. I'll let you run the show on that one this time because I kind of made a hash of it a couple of weeks ago.
No,
when
you,
we're here.
You did fine. You just chose the wrong timing.
Yeah,
you started.
But I didn't throw to Lena. I didn't throw to the producers.
Yeah,
it wasn't quite. You know, you're the vet, so I'll turn the reins over to you for that. But we do need a prompt.
Give the guys a second chance. I'll leave it to you.
That's fair. All right.
You make one mistake, that's it?
No, I'm just saying.
Banished from leading guys team and
dude? Why not? If you have a specialist on hand.
Sure.
Why not?
Coming in for the ninth inning.
Yeah, exactly. You're the closer.
That's fine.
Don't stretch out the starter. Just bring in the guy whose job it is. Anyways.
Okay, so
we do need a prompt.
Yeah. We have a couple of internal suggestions, but they didn't really grasp us. Because usually on a Friday, you're like, hey, what about this idea? And everyone's just like, boom, great idea.
Okay, obvious.
Last week, BC Lions may have been the best version of Guys Name and Dudes we've ever had. That many submissions into the inbox. It was wild. Mm-hmm. Like, the inbox, you're very aware of what happens in the inbox. It wasn't even, like, scrolling updating. It was, like, block updating.
That's amazing.
It was going so fast, couldn't keep up. So people were fired up about BC Lions last week. So we have a couple ideas. If we don't get a better one by 12:30, noon 30, we will go with one of ours. But we are open to suggestions this week on Guys Name and Dudes prompts.
All right, so get those suggestions in, and we'll announce what it is later on in the show. Okay, so there's some Canucks updates, some rumblings out there to get to, but I do want to start talking about the Stanley Cup Final, which could be over as soon as tomorrow with the Florida Panthers taking a 3-0 series lead over the Edmonton Oilers last night, and you know, Florida holding on after getting out to the big 4-1 lead. Edmonton makes it 4-3, but they can't do anything more than that. And, you know, I think as much as people maybe would have liked to see a longer series, there will also be a lot of Canucks fans who would be perfectly content with Edmonton going down 4 in a row if that's how it plays out. And there's a lot. You know, we heard from Chris Knobloch yesterday, right? Hey, I don't think we're that far off. I think we've proven we can play with them. And you can debate that, right? Hey, you actually haven't beat them yet this year. You're down a lot in goal differential during the series. People will point to Sergei Bobrovsky. He's having an absolutely incredible series. That save on McLeod in the third was big time. That's Conn Smythe winning type of moment. But I also think there's been this idea of, well, what we're seeing is Florida's superior depth versus Edmonton's lack of depth. And I get that, right? Because I think it is clear that Florida is the deeper team. But I think I don't think depth is quite the right way to look at it, right? Because when you talk about depth players, like what positions in the lineup are you talking about?
Bottom six, bottom pair.
And I don't think that's really what's swinging this series. Like, I don't think, you know, all due respect to OEL and Dmitry Kulikov, I don't think they're the difference versus, you know, Vincent Desharnais and Darnell Nurse.
They're not making mistakes.
Sure.
I would say their biggest contribution is they're not making mistakes, yeah.
But I think what the actual biggest difference is, like the biggest thing separating the Panthers from the Oilers, and I think you could say the biggest thing separating the Panthers from the Canucks as well, it's not the depth per se. It's the guys who are like right next in line after your absolute top end players, right? And so you look at the Florida Panthers and who that is. Obviously, they've got Barkov and they've got Tkachuk at the top of their lineup. Two absolute studs. We're all seeing what Alexander Barkov is doing, right? Then you got Sam Reinhart, you take as your third best forward. He's really, really qualified for that role. Then you've got Sam Bennett and Carter Verhaeghe. And that's where the differentiation starts to come in for me for the Panthers versus the Oilers. Because even the Oilers, right? It's McDavid, it's Dreisaitl, it's Hyman, it's Nugent Hopkins, who I like. But then there's that fifth guy. And the guy who's played the fifth most ice time for them at forward, 5-on-5 in this series, is Adam Henrique. I like Adam Henrique. He's okay. But if you're comparing Adam Henrique versus Sam Bennett, like that's a big drop-off in that kind of fifth best forward spot. And I think on the blue line, it's even more severe, right? Top three in ice time for the Panthers, Montour, Ekblad, Gustav Forsling.
Now, mind you, they load those guys up with 22-plus minutes.
That's a really good, really good top three. On Edmonton's side, hey, Bouchard, plenty of criticisms of his game, but obviously a really good player as well. Matthias Ekholm, a really good player. Third most ice time is Brett Kulak. So if you were to flip, like, Brandon Montour for Brett Kulak, you know what I mean? Like, third most ice time defenseman for both teams, that's a huge swing in this series, right? And I think that's really what we're seeing here more than anything else is just Florida has, like, one or two more legitimate needle-moving players in the lineup than the Edmonton Oilers do. It's that much more than it is about the guys in the bottom six, the guys on the bottom pairing. And I think if you extend that lesson or that takeaway to the Canucks, it kind of clarifies what the job of the Canucks is to do, right? Like, find that third defenseman behind Hughes, behind Hronek, or maybe even slotting in above Hronek, so you're not, like Edmonton, reliant so much on Ekholm and Bouchard. Find that one additional forward, at least, so you have Miller, Pettersson, Besser, plus the other guy, and then you might need even a fifth guy on top of that. But those are kind of the key pieces. If you're trying to take lessons away from what Florida's done in the Stanley Cup final, to me, it's, yeah, we all know the stars are important. We all know, as you said, you need the guys at the bottom of your roster to play their role, to not make mistakes. But that second layer of talent, those guys that are not quite at the very top end of your roster but aren't depth players either, I think that's what's making the difference more than anything else for Florida in this series.
Is it at all influenced to you because of the injuries, though, of the level of attrition that, I guess, Edmonton has gone through? Like, the Evander Kane
of it? But see, I don't think healthy Evander Kane is changing this conversation for me, really, at this stage of his career. I see what you mean. Like, could he at least close the gap, right,
like,
between Sam Bennett and, you know?
You're unequivocally right. But I do think part of it is how much is the deterioration happening for Edmonton leading to this, rather than if both teams were healthy, would it look like this?
Okay, but it's Evander Kane and it's who else? Darnell Nurse that you would put in that category? But again, like, even healthy Darnell Nurse.
Yeah, no, it's fair.
It's still not changing that conversation. And I think more than anything, I think that's Edmonton's biggest problem has been missing that third defenseman they can rely on.
I go back to round two, and I said this after game two. I wasn't sure if there was a fifth guy that I was concerned about that was regularly going to score. It was those four guys on the power play. Mm-hmm. And Nuge is a contributor, but as far as, like, goal scoring?
Sure.
Obviously, he shows up in game seven. But in general, game to game, minute to minute, who felt like the most threatening? And unless it's, like, on the doorstep, wide open chance, like Foegele yesterday. It's a breakaway, okay? NHLers, you kind of expect to score that goal.
Yep.
But in general, like, who's really creating for that team? And, like, Vancouver pushed them to seven. And also, I found it funny, too. Sean McIndoe on The Athletic, mm-hmm, put out the most entertaining series. C- Canucks Oilers was number one on that thing.
I think that's fair.
And it just shows, like, they got pushed to the level, and that to me was like their flaw was exposed, and Dallas just looked slow and kind of worn down by the end of that series, and maybe they couldn't take advantage of it. And there's some youth there with the depth ready to take over, but I just feel like Edmonton's flaw in a big way. Like, this series isn't even close. Forget, oh, it's a 3-0 series lead. They've had three-goal leads in these games. It's stunning. Like, they make it a bit of a shout yesterday, but it was 4-1. That game's done and dusted. Sorry to use that word there, Oilers fans. But, like that game was over early. And, yeah, Broberg puts one off an elbow and it's in, and, yeah, there's a goal late, but that game never really felt in doubt, even in the final 5-17.
Yeah, no, there wasn't that moment where you thought, well, I mean, I guess other than the stop on McLeod. Like, that's an incredible scoring chance. That, now, to be fair, McLeod maybe wants to lift the puck up off the ice a little bit, but Bobrovsky's still in great position and makes a really good save. That's a great scoring chance.
Okay,
come on.
Sure.
Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
you
sure.
know it is.
But, like, I don't know. I didn't view this game as Florida's not going to win it.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Now, I do think that moment's a big deal, right? Because if they tie the game up there and then all of a sudden, you know, where does the series go versus where we are now and it's 3-0 and you can pretty much put this one in the books, I'm not buying a 4-straight win comeback here for the Edmonton Oilers. But, you know, your point about looking at the Oilers series against the Canucks, and again, I think, you know, we can focus on Pettersson. I think that's totally fair, right? We can focus on Hronek and his performance. I think that's totally fair. But again, it was those next top of the lineup contributors that I think they were really missing, right? They had Ilya Mikheyev up with Miller and Pettersson in game 7. If you have not, doesn't have to be a superstar, right? But just like another guy who's roughly equivalent to Brock Besser, right? A Carter Verhaeghe type. And I know these are really good players, but if you have that other option to go to in that spot, the Edmonton could have been eliminated in game 7. I think it's the same thing on the blue line as well. You know, you look at the Panthers' bottom three. Nico Mikkola, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Dmitry Kulikov. Is that better than the defenseman 4-6 for the Canucks? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
The gap is in the top three defensemen, right? The bottom six even for the Canucks, right? Like, if you have Bluger, Garland, Joshua. Now, I know Garland and Joshua are playing more top 6 minutes in the playoffs, but when healthy, I think you look at the bottom six for Florida versus the bottom six for the Canucks. It's not that big a gap, but again, the difference is, you know, Pugh Suter and Nils Höglander are playing in your top six versus guys like Carter Verhaeghe and Sam Bennett. And to me, you know, we all talk about Jake Guentzel, and I think that is an amazing target. I think they should absolutely go out and try to get Jake Guentzel. But then you need to keep adding more, not at the Guentzel tier, but maybe just like a notch below that to your lineup, whether it's on the blue line or at forward for this team to be competitive with the likes of the Florida Panthers.
I don't know, man. It just... Like, one way to create the depth is rather than look at it and say, hey, they have to go get more of the depth players. If they go get a Guentzel, some of your current players become the depth players.
True.
Like that's the way you can work the problem, too.
Or become that second layer. And yeah. So, right now, if we're just doing it slotting in as, like, best forwards, right? So it would be Miller / Pettersson. We don't need to start a big firestorm debate here. We'll put them 1 and 2 in some order, 1A, 1B.
Well, one guy's making 11.6, so anyways.
Besser's number 3.
Yeah.
So I think
– I've said this routinely. They only have 3 top 6 players.
The way I would look at it is you got to slot in somebody above Besser.
Correct.
And then probably slot in, like, a really good 5th forward, too. You know what I mean? Like, I think Besser can be your 4th best forward. I think 3rd is probably a little too much when you compare it to a team like Florida.
Unless you have a collection of guys.
Unless you're, like, 5 and 6 or 4, 5 and 6 are all really, really good. You know what I mean? Then maybe he can be your 3rd. But I think I would look at it as you need a 3rd best forward. And then you probably, okay, Besser can be your 4th, and then you need a 5th best forward. And on the blue line, you need either, like, a 2nd best defenseman above Hronek or a really good 3rd defenseman behind Hronek.
That's why it's really interesting to me, like, the Lindholm money that's now not being spent on Lindholm.
Mm-hmm.
I am very open to the concept of that being spent on anybody outside of goalie. But if you told me it was a left-handed D-man, and you went and got another stud, and yeah, it's behind Quinn Hughes, but if it's someone that can be a penalty killer, but also, like, extremely effective at 5-on-5, I have no problem spending $7 million on that spot.
Yep.
And, like, this is where that push-pull of, okay, do you fulfill need going into this offseason, or you do fulfill just the need that
talent.
Is talent.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just a good team. And look, some teams have solved the thing of like, hey, we'll just go with three left-handed D and we'll figure out the right side. As much as there's like a demand to have Filip Hronek and if he moves on, like replace it with equal level talent, to me, like the more interesting exercise is just get good players.
Yeah.
More than anything is just get good players.
Get top half, top third of the roster type players, right? And not just like guys who can do the job, right? Hey, if you play him with Pettersson, he can be productive. But
no,
guys who are at that standard on a Stanley Cup team.
The level the term I like to use is regression proof. Like, there's a very small collection of top-line players, they would say. Like, I think Brock Besser is producing at a first-line level. I don't necessarily view him as a top-line player. Because if he scored 27 goals next year, would you be surprised?
No.
24, right? It wouldn't stun you if that reality existed. Now, the Gensels of the world, if that dude doesn't score 30, I'm, like, really surprised. And those are the levels of players. Like, it might be a small gap, but that gap does exist between, you know, eight forwards on the left wing, maybe, you know, seven forwards on the right wing and, you know, 20 centers. And then probably about add another 10 D-men on each side. That, to me, I look at and say, those are the regression-proof type players. And you can get one of those guys. That, to me, is how you solve the problem. And Gensel is one of those guys that exists in this offseason window.
And the point about handedness with the defenseman is a good one too, right? Because like I think a key lesson here is you need that third really good defenseman,
yeah.
Really high-end defenseman, right? That's what Edmonton lacks. That's what Florida has. And guess what? If you have three really good defensemen, at least two of them are going to be the same hand. Mm-hmm. That's how it's going to work. That's just how the math works. So you need that guy. It doesn't really matter if he's right-handed or left-handed. I think what they need more than anything is a Gustav Forsling or a Mattias Ekholm type, right? Where it's somebody whose value doesn't rely on being on the power play, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're just a great 5-on-5, two-way
defenseman. But because you're missing the Ian Cole minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that role has to get filled. And I don't know if you're just going to piecemeal it and say, well, Carson Soucy can do it. Like, I'm not sure if you'll find a bigger fan of Carson Soucy's game in this city than me. And I think he's a competent top 4 D-man.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I'd really love? Him to be on the third pair.
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome. Like now you're the specialist,
or at
shut
least
down
to,
pair,
at,
but also
at least be your actual, like you're clearly your fourth defenseman. You know what I mean? Like he could be the
yeah.
complimentary player in next to a really good right shot guy.
I'm just saying, in my world of like, you just have to spend the $7 million
yeah.
somewhere. I'm okay with the idea of trying to upgrade on Carson Soucy.
Well, and the good thing about Carson Soucy is like his contract. It's not like, you know, he's making just over $3 million.
Yeah.
It's not like it kills you on the third pair.
Not
you can stomach having that on the third pair. If you are ever in a situation where it's Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers on your third pair, you're like, hey, that's just fine. We can live with that, absolutely. Okay, so that discussion brings us back to some of the updates that are going around. And, you know, we've heard from Elliot Friedman that doesn't sound like Elias Lindholm is going to be coming back. The Canucks are kind of internally moving on from that. I think part of the logic there is, yeah, he fills a need, but is that the most talent, the most upside we can get with this money if we're spending, you know, up to $7 million plus on him? Now, Nikita Zadorov sounded like it was trending in that direction as well. On the latest 32 Thoughts, Elliot Friedman said he still thinks it's less than a 50% chance that Zadorov re-signs with the Canucks, but it's not over yet. He said somebody reached out and told him, don't count it out just yet, and he says we should know in the coming days where this one is going. Rick Dalyol also reporting today that he expects the Canucks to make their final offer to Nikita Zadorov this weekend. So we'll see. Keep your ears out. You know, obviously we'll have it here if anything does happen. But to tie it into our discussion about elevating the level of talent, if you're paying Nikita Zadorov, let's say, $5 million a season, we all love Nikita Zadorov, what he did in the playoffs. But does he meet that bar of being your third best defenseman on a Stanley Cup contending team? I don't think he does at this point. Some people are going to say, hey, I think he has another level to get to. I think we started to see it. The coaching staff leaned him in the playoffs. I understand that. But it's a very similar conversation with Lindholm, right? Can he be that true top-of-the-lineup piece for you if you're going to contend for a Stanley Cup at that number? And I don't think he's that guy, right? And so, yeah, does it hurt to lose him? His size, his intensity, his physicality, that was all a big part of your identity, especially in the playoffs. It absolutely does. but I don't think you can let that force you into making a mistake on the contract for a guy who's, you know, more of a 4-5 than anything else.
I know recently the phrase of, well, if they're willing to spend this much on Lindholm, why don't they just spend a little bit more on Gensel, has been echoed. If they're willing to spend $5 million on Nikita Zadorov, why wouldn't you just spend on a true, like, this guy is, we don't have to have a conversation about it, top four D-man.
Yeah.
And, again, as I said earlier, like, I like Carson Soucy, but I understand some people are like, I don't know, man. And I think it's a discussion. Is he a top four? Isn't he a top four? He is for me. I understand why he isn't for other people. That conversation exists for Nikita Zadorov. So if you're willing to spend five on uncertainty, just spend six on certainty, and you can look at this and say, hey, we have another stud here. We have another problem solved.
Now, who's the stud you're getting for $6 million?
I know, that's the thing.
That's the conversation, right? Because you're probably, like, to get a true, I think to eliminate that certainty, you're probably paying a pretty significant premium in this free agent class.
Well, the thing is, in this free agent class, the left-handed D market, it's so weird. The left-handed D market is not flush.
No.
But the right-handed D market is full of names. Like, to the point that I don't even bring up Brandon Montour sometimes because it doesn't even really make sense for Vancouver, too.
He's probably going to get not a fit.
He's probably just going to get paid in a big way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, the left-handed D market does really fall off fast after Nikita Zadorov. There's, like, a restricted free agent, like Ryan Lindgren, and they in New York might have all sorts of salary cap issues moving forward because they got Shesterkin to sign. They got Alex Lafreniere to sign. They just got Capococco done at $2.4 million. They also have Keandre Miller, who is a year away, I believe, from being signed. And you kind of just go through their whole and I think they only have $11 million of cap space to throw on top of that. So, I don't know. Like, maybe there's a team there you look at, but to get a left-handed D-man, you might have to do it through the trade market, if that's something they want to do.
Yeah, and I still think a right-shot defenseman, if they're going to dip into free agency, is more probable because, as you said, there's just so many more options out there, right? And even if it's one of the attractive names who kind of doesn't get signed on July 1st, is maybe out there a little bit longer than they'd like. Austin and Langley text in, the last time the fan base was this passionate about extending someone, it was Kuzmenko. I love the folk hero story with Zadorov, but I really don't want them to do something stupid. That's from Austin and Langley. And that's the thing, right? Like, I don't think anyone is complaining about the player Zadorov, right, and what he provided for the team, but you just have to be realistic about what it's worth. And to the Canucks' credit, based on all the reporting, they're holding pretty firm on, hey, here's the number we're comfortable with, and we're not going to go above that.
I feel like the final offer idea sheds a glimmer of hope, but like, we had seen a final offer discussion for Bohorvat too, and the Canucks have been very good at setting a price, and this is what it's going to be, and we're going to live pretty close to it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we're going to see like $1 million AAV change over here on a final offer. It might be marginal because you make a last little return, but I don't know if this strikes me with a lot of hope that something gets resolved for Zadorov in Vancouver.
Yeah, and Dhaliwal also said on Halford and Brough this morning that, you know, he wasn't hearing a lot of urgency from the Canucks, so it might be a final offer, but it might not be a significant raise. It might not be an impressive final offer, at least from the perspective of Dan Milstein.
And I kind of do like that approach, to be honest, of the way the Canucks have done this, of why low ball and we'll incrementally work our way up. Just like, hey, we have a price. This is it. There's a little wiggle room, but essentially we're coming in with our idea of what you're worth.
Well, I also think a lot of Canucks fans are probably seeing this offseason, at least partially through the lens of what happened after the bubble, right? When so many key free agents departed and how much that affected the team going forward after that, right? I think there was a real sense of, man, that sucked that we lost all those players. But I think you look at how this management team is handling it. The problem with letting Tanev and Markstrom and Toffoli go, it wasn't just that you lost those players. It was the way it was handled, right? The lack of communication. Like, hey, they didn't even make me an offer. That's not what's playing out here, right? And it's been pretty public, the reporting of, we really like Zadorov. We'd love to have him back. Here's our number. We're trying to make it work. Same thing with Lindholm. Hey, we're willing to go 7-by-7 on Elias Lindholm. So that no one's going to be able to turn around and say, like, ah, they botched this. They didn't even try to get these guys back, right? Like, we've heard, hey, the players really want Elias Lindholm. They're campaigning him for him to stay. But I think the players also understand that, you know, this is a hard cap league. So if the team is able to say to them, hey, we made a really competitive offer, we made our best offer, he decided to go elsewhere, I think you're protected from that sense of the players being frustrated with departing free agents here. All right, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your takes in now. Randy Janda will join us possibly live on location at the Nat. We'll see. We'll see if Randeep can make it here in time. That's coming up at noon. We got another open segment on the other side, so get your texts in here. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here live at Nat Bailey Stadium on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Bick Nazar here with you. We're live from the Mobile Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. It's a doubleheader for the Seas today against Spokane. Game one getting going in about 90 minutes here at the Nat. 105 first pitch, and the man who will have the call joins us now. He is Tyler Zickel. Tyler, nice to see you again, man. How's it going?
Oh, good day, fellas. We are here, we are live, and there's blue sky above us. This is terrific. You know, it's becoming a Friday tradition. Of course, we've been doing the Fortis BC Nooners for years, but a Fortis BC Nooner doubleheader for the third time in five home series this season. Mother Nature, you know, keeping us hydrated.
I imagine you've learned a lot about, like, meteorology in your job, especially since you relocated to Vancouver. Like, a lot of weather forecasting going on at the Nat these days.
Well, I'm from San Diego, California, so the weather forecast is 75 and sunny, and that's my American showing. That's Fahrenheit. Yeah, so what would that be, 19 degrees, 20?
Something like that,
for
sure.
That's too quick a math for me to figure out on the fly.
It is only 11:30.
I just know it's comfortable. That's what I know. We're close enough. Something like that. Something about 20. All right. So I know you were just giving Bick the starting pitching breakdown. But what can fans expect to see for the two games on the mound from the Seas tonight?
Yeah. So double dip. 105 first pitch. Game one. Game two starts about 30 minutes after the completion of game one. 2 7 inning games, which is the norm in minor league baseball doubleheaders. Carson Pierce out of Oklahoma, who joined us about a month ago, he's making another spot start. His first was last week in Everett. It was so-so, but he was called in to pitch to start, in fact, 90 minutes before the game was supposed to start.
Oh, that's tough.
So an opportunity today to know he's been starting for a week. We'll see how it goes. And then in game two, Chris McIlvaine, former Vanderbilt Commodore, he was the return in the Santiago Espinal trade. So whenever you get traded one-for-one for a big league infielder, you know you've got some talent, and we've seen that from Chris McIlvaine. He's been really nice for the Seas so far over the first 2 months.
Last night, you were just telling us as well, fantastic start on the mound as well.
Connor O'Halloran, the pride of Sauk City, as I've been informed, is what they call it out there in Ontario. Mississauga, Ontario's finest. O'Halloran, a guy drafted out of Michigan last year, started with single-A Dunedin in 2024. In three starts, this is a guy who's already put up 17 innings and has really just had one bad inning in which he gave up four runs last week, but last night, his first quality start, which of course is six innings or more, three earned runs or less. He only gave up one run, scattered four hits, looked really good.
How do you find the jump is for players now coming from Dunedin at the A level to the high A level for the Canadians? And, you know, as you said, he seems to be adjusting really well. But just in general, how much of an adjustment is that increase in level for the players?
From low A to high A, or less as they call it, single A now, not low A. But it's less of a jump than going from Vancouver
to
New Hampshire, for sure. But you see it in terms of the pitching more so than the hitting, I think, because specifically with the Florida State League, you've got the automatic balls and strikes system, and you've got the challenges, robo-umps, all that. We see pitchers, O'Halloran included 2 weeks ago in his first start here, who try and kind of carve out those edges, really nick the side of the zone that's a strike for a robot but isn't a strike for a human the same way. So in those early starts for guys who have just come up from single-A Dunedin, you can tell that they're a little perplexed as to why they might not get some of those borderline calls the same way, because they've been so used to not only having all that technology but playing down at a big league quality facility, but they're happy to trade it, they say, for the vibes here at the Nat. You're not playing for many people down at TD Ballpark in Dunedin, unless it's spring training, of course.
Just wanted to cycle back to McIlvaine as well. Just that pressure of being the acquisition. Look, your talent dictates your opportunity, of course. But that level of a transaction, does that bring a little bit more attention or pressure to the player?
Yeah, but what I've really noticed about McIlvaine is that he's been able to stay pretty even-keeled. He's a guy who's very process and routine-oriented, which I think works really well for a starting pitcher. When you know when you're going to start, you know how much time you have every day to get ready. So this is a guy who regardless of what uniform is on his chest, as he shared with me early on in the season, he's going to stick to those routines and those processes to stay grounded and stay anchored in who he is as a pitcher. He's a guy who's going to really go attack. He's not afraid to work with runners on base, and somebody as well who, if you need a big start, he's a guy who can rise to an occasion. And something I found out 2 weeks ago, orders prime rib the night before every start.
Let's go.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's fantastic.
You got to treat yourself.
Yeah. Like, that's part of the routine?
Yes, it just started, I think, in college at Vanderbilt. And Chris is from Thompson Station, Tennessee, so there's some country to him. But he gets a nice prime rib dinner and really enjoys himself the night before to get himself in that mindset. And, you know, the physical state of having prime rib the night before a start, you get a good night's rest.
Is there a name that goes with it? Is he prime? Is he...
Might have to be.
Because last year we had Cheese Dallas.
We did, yes. Yeah. You know what? I think there may be something here. There may be something here. Let's workshop that as the season continues. Next time we're all chatting, we may have to bring him
Bick's
on.
Bick's just going to demand credit for that.
By the way,
a lot of our listeners are texting in that it's about 24 Celsius, 75.
Okay, terrific. So Shout out to the fan base.
They're on top of things. In terms of pitchers, you know, we're talking about the pitchers that, you know, one guy who went last night who we're going to see today as well. And, of course, you know, the Seas have had so many great pitchers come through here over the last 10 years or so, going back to the days of, you know, Syndergaard and Aaron Sanchez. With so much focus on velocity these days at the major league level, right? You know, you see Paul Skeens come up and he's throwing 100, and it seems like everyone's throwing high 90s. How do you find the pitcher's balance, kind of, okay, the focus on speed, the focus on velocity, while also making sure they're taking care of more of the, you know, you might call it the traditional arts of pitching, right? The command, the location, all of that stuff.
Singularly here in Vancouver, I witness the pitching coaches, which is Austin Bibbins, Dierks, ABD, the former big leaguer, and Carson Phillips, who's in his first ever professional coaching job, young kid doing a great job with the bullpen. They meet with the pitchers every day and talk about not just strategy, but also going over various physical stats that they get from our training and high-performance staff. And so there is kind of a whole body and whole mind approach to being able to get these guys in their best physical shape. But these days, guys like to say, in the weight room specifically, mass equals gas, and that's what these pitchers are all trying to do, put on weight to be able to add velo, so you light up the radar gun, you've got higher spin rates, you've got sharper breaking balls, but at the same time, we're seeing how that's having a physical effect on pitchers across the sport. Yeah. So it feels like eventually things will maybe start to come back towards the middle a little bit, where now we can have a few more Greg Maddux types who have three pitches that they can locate at any part of the zone but aren't going to blow you away with heat. And also, I think there's some talk now in Major League Baseball about adjusting the rules in terms of making starters go longer, which would then mean you can't throw as hard because you've got to last five or six innings, and now you've got to be a little more crafty. And as a traditionalist myself, I certainly love to see it when a guy goes out and uses all his pitches well, locates in all part of the zone, and he's also able to trust his defense behind you because it's not a one-man game.
Well, I was just going to say, I wonder if we get some more balls in play with those types of rules. Right.
Because
I think about, you know, you mentioned Greg Maddux. I'm a huge Jays fan, so I think about Roy Halladay, right? You know, it wasn't a soft tosser by any means, but he did it with his stuff or like with the movement, with the command, with the control, and, you know, got a lot of ground balls. The ball was in play, relying on the defense to make plays behind him, and I feel like, you know, look, a strikeout when a guy's throwing 100, that can be pretty entertaining. Don't get me wrong, but maybe just turn the dial a little bit more to the balls in play could do a lot for the product at the major league levels, too.
100%. And you know what? In this day and age of highlights and social media, it is the strikeouts that really get those views and the likes and the attention. But for me, there's something to be said for a guy who scatters four hits and throws only, you know, 10, 12 pitches an inning. Because if you're striking out everybody, your pitch count's going up, too.
I almost view it as like an experiment in human performance, and that we might be getting to the tail end of that cycle. Because, like, look, it's fascinating to see how many of these players are now throwing at triple digits, but has it come to that expense, as you mentioned, some injuries? And not just do you tail back on it because of the injuries, but do you tail back on it and be like, okay, we experimented how far we can go, and now it probably feels like we've reached the limit. Now, I don't want to ever say there's limits on human performance because everything evolves and all these things, but it does feel like it's getting to an excessive point that it's actually hurting the product because people are out of the game now.
Yeah, you get these big-time stars who are not now able to be marketed around if you're just thinking about it from a purely business standpoint, but on a more human and physical side of things and a spiritual side of things, we don't want to participate in a sport that is injuring guys.
Yeah,
we see this across the NFL landscape, for example, and while a head injury is much different than an arm injury, your life isn't affected quite the same way. I'm not going so far as to say that, certainly not, but
it's still their craft.
You run into
the thing.
Exactly. These guys have contributed their life to this. why are these guys being forced to sacrifice their body to where they can't even participate anymore, just in the spirit of adding a few more MPH to the fastball?
And I think there's a trickle-down effect, not just to the minor leagues, but to youth baseball as well, right? Where if you're an up-and-coming, you know, 15-year-old, 16-year-old pitcher, you've got your eyes maybe on the NCAA, right? Like, there's that pressure to kind of max out on the velocity. As you said, mass equals gas, and that can be a dangerous spot as well. Tyler, we'll let you go and get prepped for the doubleheader.
And rest your voice, doubleheader today.
Absolutely, yeah, that's
innings
true.
Of bliss,
yeah,
but, you know, this will be the fifth doubleheader we've played in all told this year, home and road. So
you're getting used to it. Yeah. You're an old hand.
This is it. It's riding a bike.
Speaking of managing usage here, come on, man. Like, what are you worried about? The vocal cords here.
I wanted to read this text. Our guy Victor texted, and he says, "Hi, Jamie. Can you tell Tyler I wasn't really interested in C's ball until I heard the quality commentating from our man here? So you turned him into a fan, Zickle, with your call on the games. Well,
Victor,
done.
Thank you very much. Cheers to that. Victor, we'll see you on the radio, my man. Thank you very much. That's awesome.
That's Tyler Zickle. He'll have the call of the doubleheader. Thanks for doing this, man. Always appreciate it.
Cheers, fellas. Go C's.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Yeah, doubleheader, another one. Because, yeah, the weather has not fully cooperated yet this season for the C's. Hopefully it turns around in a big way for them. Although I do know, one, we heard from a worker here that they got sellouts all 3 days this weekend. I also know because I checked for tickets for Father's Day on Sunday, and I was like, I'm too late. Did not plan that well.
No, you,
that's a sellout. Also, that's a good ticket to get.
Yeah, it's always going to be a popular ticket once the calendar turns to June and C season gets underway. But also, you had to plan your own Father's Day?
No, I was just curious.
Oh, okay.
I was just like, oh, maybe, you know, it pops into my head. I'll
do
check,
one of those things
where,
like, just leave the notes, be like, you know, it'd be cool, Father's Day at the Nats. I wonder if anyone has looked up tickets at CanadiansBaseball.com.
It's supposed to rain anyways, I think. But it'll still be fun. It'll still be a good time.
Father's Day. Yeah.
All right, 6:50.
Do they bring out fathers for the sushi races instead?
They should. It should be like, you know how they do family fun days where kids under 12 can run the bases? It should be dads can run the bases after that.
It would just be chaos.
What? Guys bowling each other over?
A lot of dudes are signing up for that one.
A lot of
fast.
Torn hamstrings and hurting knees. Yeah.
They could also do now I know the groundskeepers take their job seriously because they do like a lawn mowing competition for the dads on Father's Day, something like that. Get the mowers out.
Amazing.
Get the weed whackers out, do some trimming work.
Amazing.
Do like a whole dad Olympics.
I think we stumbled into a couple of things today. Would you have to bring your own gear?
Can you imagine the pride? Well, that's an interesting question because some guys probably love their lawnmowers.
Yeah.
Imagine the pride if you won the Nat Bailey Father's Day lawn mowing competition.
Oh.
It's like you're in the Dad Hall of Fame, buddy.
Look, I'm not a big chore person, but my favorite one is like landscaping.
Really?
Yeah, I was a big cut the grass kid growing up.
No kidding.
I always loved that one.
Why? What speaks to you about it?
It's very soothing out in the heat. You know, vacuuming, it's noisy, you're inside, it's just like, But outside, just, you know, 40 minutes, cut the grass, back and forth.
Sure.
Try to do a design with no understanding of, like, the logistics of
how it works. How do I even do this?
Yeah,
I was like, I'm going to try.
It's like, do I need different grass for the left diagonal and the different grass for the right diagonal? Like, what's going on here?
How do they do this? By the way, somebody texted in, isn't Father's Day next week? It's on Sunday, guys. So if you have a dad who's still with us and you've got to do something for on Father's Day,
Sunday.
Take care of that by Sunday because that's what Father's Day is.
I always find that the advertising for Father's Day starts the week of and Mother's Day is like 6 weeks in advance. Which, like, hey, rightfully so, right? But I always just find it funny that dudes are always like, wait, it's this week?
Yeah.
It's this week?
What? When's Father's Day? I always remember because it's Sunday of the U.S. Open. That's how I remember. Because it's like, what do dads want to do on Sunday? They want to watch the final round of the U.S. Open.
So that's
how you know. The U.S. Open is this week? It's Father's Day.
So you can tell us of all the U.S. Opens through the days, like Rocco versus Tiger. You're like, yeah, I was watching that one. Rocco sitting there waiting Tiger on one leg.
My greatest aspiration every Father's Day is to have like an early afternoon nap on the couch while watching the U.S. Open. That's all I want for Father's Day. Just pass out on the couch. Watching some U.S. Open golf.
Fathers, text in, 650-650. What are you hoping for on Sunday?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
What's your ideal Father's Day?
How is that on a minor league thing? Of like, I guess because the groundskeepers.
That's the thing. You'd have to like roll out a section of turf or something. You can't have amateurs butchering the beautiful turf at the beautiful grass at Nat Bailey.
What if you just had, like, here in the parking lot, throughout the course of the game, fathers are just out here working on the lawn. And then seventh inning stretch, they take it in. The groundskeepers get to decide who wins. I think we have
something
here.
Interesting.
We have something here.
Well, look, because you've got, I mean, you've got grass.
By the way,
the
first father texting in Austin and Langley, celebrating a Panthers Stanley Cup win on Sunday. Well played. Well played.
Let's go. You've got the lawn. You've got grills set up. So you can do a grilling combo. There's
this
a lot of, like, dad stuff.
This
just
is like
five
a triathlon.
Men circling around the grill, watching one guy grill while the others comment.
This is like a triathlon right now here. This is a big thing.
This is, I mean, there's a reason dads love going to the ballpark, right? There's a lot of just, like, dad-themed stuff already ready at the ballpark. So there's something here. No doubt about it. Okay.
Grills and lawns. Yeah.
Grills and lawns. That's what it's
great
all about.
Great band name right there.
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We were talking about the Canucks' approach to free agency, kind of still searching, not for that superstar talent, right? Because I think we all agree they've got that taken care of. But just that next tier of guys down that's been so important for the Panthers, kind of the differentiating factor for the Panthers, and how that search might inform their strategy on Zadorov, inform their strategy on Lindholm. This text came in. Talking about free agent left-handed defenseman, don't sleep on Brendan Dillon. Now, this texter says he's a legitimate number four D-man. I would look at him more as that in that 4-5 mold as well, kind of someone who you love on your third pair. If he's in your top four, you want him to have a really, really strong partner. But this texter says would be great, especially if Zadorov isn't back. And I think that's going to be – first of all, I really like Brendan Dillon as well. Mm-hmm. Local product. You know, he brings that size element. He's not going to replicate everything that Zadorov does in terms of the swagger. You're not expecting him to do that. But I think the key is going to be whether it's Lindholm at center as your third-line center, whether it's Zadorov who brings that size on the left side of your defense, finding something at least close to it or something that gives you enough of those attributes at a much cheaper price. And that's where I think Brendan Dillon comes in. Like, to me, he makes a ton of sense as a target. If you aren't able to get the deal with Zadorov done, you're looking for someone with some physicality and some experience on your blue line. You're probably not going to cost a lot, although, hey, you never know. He's local. Maybe that helps you get him in the door a little bit cheaper. That's exactly the kind of, okay, where can we save money? Right, and you can save money by going from Zadorov to Brendan Dillon. That will allow us to chase a Jake Guentzel and maybe even an additional needle mover type player.
Oh man, and that's reality. You're gonna have to move a contract out. I feel like you just added like six guys to the roster.
No, Brendan Dillon, Jake Guentzel, and one more guy.
Okay, so that's
so let's say you do Jake Guentzel for $9 million.
Yeah, I don't even think that gets it done, but nevertheless.
Okay, 9.5?
Sure.
Okay.
Anyways, I shouldn't have said that, but yeah. I just think it's going to cost more in Vancouver than it would anywhere else.
That's fair. That's
by the way,
fair.
Do you have a number where you're very comfortable going to for Jake Guentzel?
Probably 9.5.
And you, if he says, like, hey, 9.75,
no, well, I mean, that's the thing with, like, walk-away numbers. Like, of course not.
But like, doesn't that feel low?
9.75?
I don't know. Just
I don't think so. What do you think Sam Reinhart's going to get?
Oh, that number is going to be crazy.
Yeah.
That number is so crazy that, like, I'm not even looking down the bar to be like, hey, Sam Reinhart.
No, well, he's staying in Florida.
Yeah.
But, like, now, maybe he gets just such a massive Florida discount, but if Jake Guentzel is getting
9.5,
potentially 10, you're
like,
saying.
I would be comfortable. Sorry, let me rephrase that. I would still be happy if it was like 10.5 and he signs in Vancouver. I would like
10.5.
If I'm on the air and 10.5 is announced, I'm ecstatic. Like, Jake Guentzel's coming to.
Ecstatic!
Ecstatic. Like, I get the.
I mean,
it's
I get.
Fraught
it.
With player,
I get it.
Fraught with peril, but like 10.5. Let's carry
okay,
on,
so
man.
Let's say so. What are they?
Have 4.75.
They have about 28 million. They have about 28 million in space right now. Okay, now you got to do Hronek.
25.
I think you can get it up.
Oh, with
like,
the guys moving
yeah,
down.
Yeah,
church.
Yeah, yeah. So let's say like 26. Now you have to do Hronek. But so if Guentzel takes 10, you still got 16 million in space, right? Look, you're probably right. If you're doing Guentzel, Hronek, and then an additional like $7 million player. Mm-hmm. You're probably moving McKay up. You're going to have to get creative. You're going to have to do some things, trade somebody else. But I don't think you should write that off. Like, I think you should at least be considering that. And that's why, honestly, I know we've heard from Sat earlier this week, right? Like, hey, if they can't get an extension done with Hronek, there's a good chance they trade him at the draft. You know, Rick Dhaliwal saying they really don't want to go to arbitration. The one thing I'll say about arbitration is the one-year number would be lower than the long-term number for Filip Hronek.
Correct. He's not buying you a
so,
favors.
can you get, like, if you get him at one for 1 year at 6.5, does that help you then go out and get that additional top of the lineup type player?
And
right,
solve
and
that's later.
Yeah, kick it down the road and say, let's see where we stand. Let's see where Tom Volander stands in a year. Let's see where our trade assets stand in a year. Let's see how everything stands in a year.
That just
but at least
extreme,
we'll make our team better this year.
That just feels extremely high risk.
It is.
I like taking, absorbing a little bit of risk. And by the way, I see everyone like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. Like, you're in the stage right now where you have to take a little bit of risk. Winning requires risk. It's safe to never crawl out of the hole and say, let's just collect assets. You have to step out of the hole at some point and be like, we're ready to go win. You have to take some risk at some point.
And you've got one more year of Brock Besser on this deal. Two more years of Thatcher Demko. JT Miller's into his 30s. I don't have a problem with
I think the window's
taking
open right
that,
now.
Taking that long-term risk on Hronek in order to maximize your chances of going into next season. Like, I've been thinking about this a lot, and all of a sudden, the thought of a one-year arbitration award, like, initially I looked at that, it's like, oh, man, that's a disaster, because then you've got this UFA. But, man, if it helps you squeeze that extra little bit of talent onto your team that can make the difference come the playoff time, I'm kind of okay with that. And you know what this management has proven is that they're okay with that uncertainty.
Yeah.
We saw it this year.
It's okay to live in the gray sometimes.
Mm-hmm. They're and okay. Because like, worst case scenario in a hard cap league is, okay, we have this pending unrestricted free agent. He's going to leave for nothing. He's not actually going to leave for nothing. You're going to get flexibility. You're going to get the opportunity to do other things when he leaves. It doesn't make it easy to stomach good players leaving, of course. But it does inherently open up possibilities for you to do something else to try to replace them.
From a process point of view, I've agreed with a lot of the steps they've made. The one that you just singled out there of like, oh, just go to arbitration with Hronek and figure it out during the year. That, to me, is like the we've gone too far on the risk. And
well,
that is like heat check. It's like we don't need the safety net on this high wire act. Let's run across.
To me, you only go down that road if you know it can set you up for something really good, right? And it's similar to the issue with Mikheyev. Like, you don't buy out Mikheyev or attach a sweetener to move him unless you know with a very high degree of certainty you're making a real impact move as a direct result. Like, you don't do it just like, hey, we need a little bit of extra cash
going into the summer.
You know what I mean? I think it has to
There were years past, like Jason Dickinson, where it's like, you needed creative.
OEL last year. It's like, you got to open up space. Yeah. You got to do it. It doesn't have to be for anyone specific. You just have to open up space. I think the difference with Mikheyev is you have space unless there's, like, a really great opportunity sitting there that you need to absorb some pain on Mikheyev to take, you probably just roll with it. Okay, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Somebody texted in, you guys are so dumb. Jake Guentzel for 7 years at 10+. He is 30, you doughheffs. And then he texted in, doughheads. It's like, well, the correction still doesn't make any sense, guys. So good effort, but better luck next time. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I hear that Randeep Janda is en route. We're about to be mobbed by his adoring fans here, tableside, at Nat Bailey. He'll join us next year on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.